Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes. With Wallace Eaton, Alma Cogan, June Whitfield, and Keno, all inviting you to...
Yes, Jimmy, I'm very happy about the two girls. Both Alma and June seem to be nice sort of girls.
Good both. Eventually, we're acting with them and not making soup with them.
Nevertheless, they're both very, very attractive. I find myself entering the studio with quite a new spring in my gait.
What's the good of a new spring in your gait when the rest of the buildings are ruined? Plato, book four. Listen, Benji.
Dick, I know what you're going to say, Jimmy. You're going to say I'm not to let the two girls get so infatuated that they fight over me. That's what you're going to say, wasn't it, Jimmy?
Benji, in three words, not likely.
My dear Jimmy, what can I do? It's not my fault they booked two girls and only one me. I can't cut myself in half.
You could let somebody else have a try.
Benji, please think of my position regarding these two young ladies. I'm in charge, you know. Oh. I'm the one who signed for them at the stores. They say one has a sense of responsibility.
I'll concentrate on the other one, then.
And talking about yourself.
You never do anything else.
Benji! Oh, if you have no respect for me, at least respect the trust placed in me by Alma Cogan's mother, the well-known Alma Mater.
Well, I give you my oath, I didn't make the first advance where Alma was concerned. It was Alma herself. During our duet last week, she volunteered a reference to my flat.
What did she say?
Just, your flat.
Hey, didn't it occur to you that she meant... No, it wouldn't, would it?
As far as June Whitfield is concerned, I admit I bought her a box of chocolates, but I give you my word, there was nothing in it.
No harm in an empty box of chocolate. Just promise me, Benji, that you won't take advantage of your position here to indulge in hankery-pankery.
Oh, I think you can rely on me to respect the code. There is such a thing as novel supply. Jimmy. Yes, you'd do better to warn off the two moths who are fluttering round my place.
Is it all right for you to sing my song now?
Ah, Miss Cogan.
Yes, I don't like standing round the microphone while Mr. Bentley is within grappling distance.
Well, you need not fear, little moth. I'm just putting out the flame right now. Come on, Bentley. Yes.
If I had a golden umbrella with the sunshine on the inside and a rainbow on the outside, if I had a golden umbrella, oh, wonderful world it would be. Your heart can get so melancholy when the bright skies above you turn to lightning and thunder. The blues come along like a trolley, a slant around out of free. But if I had a golden umbrella, such wonderful things could be done. When it storms up above, all the folks that I love would come under and laugh in the sunlight. If I had a golden umbrella, with the sunshine on the inside and the rainbow on the outside, if I had a golden umbrella, a wonderful world it would be. And if I had a golden umbrella, wonderful things could be done. But it's stormed up above all the folks that I love to come under and laugh in the sun. If I had a golden umbrella with the sunshine on the inside and the rainbow on the outside, if I had a golden umbrella, a wonderful world it would be. A wonderful world it would be.
Simply scandalous, sir. A sickening, sinful swindling of thousands of self-respecting citizens.
I wish I had a golden umbrella.
Now, look here, sir. I don't believe we...
Oh, yes, we did. We met last week. I write letters to newspapers, remember? Right. In fact, sir, I am disgusted of Tunbridge Wells.
You are?
Answer me this, sir. Why are there so few coconut ones in a quarter of liquid all salt?
No, I suppose it's some quite simple.
Swindle, sir, swindle. Why should we be fobbed off with those horrible buttony ones? Covered over with coloured ball bearings. That's not all thought, sir. That's just some thought. There's another thing I wrote a strong letter about. In a cinema, why is it this week's film's never as good as the trailer for next week?
Oh, I certainly agree with you there. Yeah. Look, wouldn't it be wonderful to see a trailer that really spoke the truth about the film that's coming next week?
Uh-huh. Okay, that's an idea. A trailer which speaks the truth. If Miss Whitfield will join us, we'll demonstrate.
Once in every decade comes a motion picture which sets the cinema back 50 years. And now, from the mighty Mogador Studios, comes the sinker to end all sinkers.
Empress of the Underground.
A milestone in the annals of bad taste. Pay out hard-earned money to watch an actress called Gloria Laverne behaving in a manner which would be offensive in a woman half her age. Here follows Gloria singing the song that finished number 189 in the hit parade.
What's that voice? Was that last dance my horse
has all the charm and appeal of a dentist's drill. Yes, the story of this picture gives a new meaning to the word interminable. It tells how Dutty Hackenlooper, a typical professor of medieval English literature, one passionate Stella Lindy, lost her, won her again, lost her again, won her, lost her, won her, lost her, and finally won her. Oh, it may have been lost her. Don't worry about it, folks. You won't stay to the end. Not after this scene.
I've been thinking this thing through, Stella. And you know what I got to figure it? Men are different from women.
You really think so, Dutch?
I'm pretty sure, Stella, baby. And when you come right down to it, women are different from men, too.
You've gone into this pretty deep, haven't you, Dutch?
Stella, baby, we Americans aren't going to solve the problems that face the world without looking at them with an adult and mature mind. Hey, Sturdinger, hurry up with my chocolate marshmallow hot malted coffee burger with the banana caramel syrup, will ya?
This Darcy Campbell will be showing at this theater on Monday next for 7 lonely days. Remember the name?
Empress of the Underground.
You didn't read the book. For Pete's sake, miss the picture.
Tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, 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 tick a lack, tick a lack, tick a lack, so I know I should resist her. I will jump to her and kiss her and begin to slap my face. Kiss me back.
Tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, keep saying it. My shoes tidy-whack in the front and the back and the yellow toes are swinging. Bells just rang, my eyes lit up and my heart went bang. My shoes tidy-whack in the front and the back, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack. My shoes tidy-whack in the front and the back, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack, tick-a-boom, tick-a-lack.
Thank you.
Tice Talking Point. This week we meet again the Glum family, the family of ordinary people who discuss the contemporary problems which afflict thinking men and women of today. Their talking point this week is flat life a contributing factor to the dissolution of the family as a social unit. Over to the Glum.
Don't let me interrupt you, love bird. I've just come in for the radio time. The boiler's gone out.
I was just teaching on that new dance, Mr. Glum. Everybody's talking about the cream.
Are they? What you been up to, Ron? Here, you tell your dad.
Nothing, Dad. We came round early because we got a bit of news. Dad, Ethel thinks she's got a maisonette.
Oh, dear, oh, Lord. Ethel, dear. Don't you try and feed it yourself. You go to the chemist.
Oh, Dad, you are a lovable old chump. Well, I mean, we've got a place to live.
Oh. Mrs. Lewis has offered to let us have a complete house, Noah.
Yes. Yeah, but there's a snag, Dad. I've got to share the bath with Mrs. Lewis.
Have you now?
Yes.
Well, you know, Ron, I did offer you and Ethel our top back room. It won't take me more than a day to shift me pigeons. All the rent won't break you.
Dad, I hope you'll take this in the spirit in which I find myself. But that sort of arrangement never works out. Mum and Eff would be in each other's saucepans all day.
Well, that's a point of view, I suppose. All I know is if I had to choose between my wife sharing a kitchen with my mum and myself sharing a bath with Mrs. Lewis, well, I know what I do. Besides, a flat is not a home.
Start, Mr. Glum. Dad and I are not all stick in the mud like you and Mrs. Glum.
Well, thank you.
Ron and I are youth. We're vibrant.
Yes, we are. We are. Yes, you're right.
We're vital. Oh, what is it, Ron?
It's just a moment, beloved. My left leg's gone to sleep.
But don't you two see? With a flat, you've got nothing of your own. It's somebody else's all the time. Well, you may laugh at my ideas. You may say I'm an old fool, if you like.
But you're an old fool, Dad.
Ron?
Yes, Dad?
I hadn't finished, had I?
No, Dad?
Well, you keep your more vibrant remarks to that. I may be old-fashioned, but this little house is mine. I can take pleasure in keeping it nice by the sweat of my own brow. Even at this moment, I've got Ron's mother distempering the kitchen ceiling. Old lady that she is. What's happened there, Mother? Oh, I told you not to touch that top step. Well... There you are. Don't try to move. I'll be in a while. What was I talking about?
The point is, Dad, we're set on this maisonette, and we came to ask you, will you lend us 35 quid for the decoration?
Just a loan, Mr. Glum.
Oh, I see. So your old dad will come use you after all. You want 35 quid, eh? Well, Ron, let me remind you of a quotation. The old order changes. Yield in place to new. You no doubt remember our Alfred Lord Tennyson had it?
Yes, Dad.
Well, you wait and all, mate.
Well, I've had a convenient, wonderful time. But I'd better be going in.
Now, well, please, aren't you forgetting something?
Huh?
Don't I get a little kiss? Good night.
dear, you'll have to wait.
I've never done that on a very first date.
Don't I get a chance to hold you fast?
Though I'm in a whirl, I hope you don't think I'm that kind of girl.
Looking in your eyes can make me weak, dear. Please, just to cheat, dear. No telling, what would I do for a little sister?
What will you do if my mother's listening? If we kiss, you may not call again.
Well, with all your might, I'm going to call you for Saturday night.
Oh, why can't that just wait for then?
You got me so perplexed, I really don't know what to say to you next. Break my heart, how near it is.
Well, okay, honey, here it is.
Oh, all of it. For a tiny little kiss tonight.
In a palace on tent.
Oh, darling, may I pay the rent?
All of it from a tiny little kiss.
A tiny little kiss tonight.
Good night.
Wake up! Three more brandies and soda, please.
Yes, sir, let's have an interesting afternoon, Edward. I went all round the National Gallery.
Yes, he's one way too celebratory nuisance, aren't they, your grace?
My dear fellow, inside the National Gallery, full of paintings, you know, nothing but colored paintings. I say, Bentley, you know La Gioconda?
Oh, of course, yes, the famous Mona Lisa. Yes, the one with the eight pneumatic smiles, yes.
Painted by Leonardo da Vinci in the year 1504.
Yes, sir.
You seem to know a lot about it, Edward. I wonder if you can explain this. Now, why is Mona Lisa smiling like that? What's the secret of the Mona Lisa smile?
Well, it's a story that should appeal to your grace.
Ah, smutty?
You can depend on us, Your Grace. Now, stop coming up and down and listen.
It is Venice in the year 1501. Venice, colorful city of palaces, bridges, and winding canals. Along a canal glides a gondola containing the master builder of the doge, Ferdinando Lisa, and his lovely brunette wife, Mona. At the helm of their graceful craft stands a gondolier singing as he works his spiked pole.
That always happens when you get a low bridge and a tall gondolier. Oh, why, see the state in which we now find ourselves, up the canal without a padlock. Oh, dear, what are we to do it? Mona, don't just sit there smiling that mysterious enigmatic smile. I dare say, Mona, that smile of thine is getting on my Venetian wick. I mean, here am I, Ferdinando Lisa, the man who's been called upon to build the biggest public building in all Italy, and ever since I showed thee the plans I designed for it, I've been sniggering like a schoolgirl looking at Greek statues.
I humbly beg my husband's pardon. I'm sure the public building is going to be...
Thou art at it again. I tell thee, Mona, I'll give thee a...
Wait, husband, look. What is that in the water ahead? Is it a floating mine?
It resembles a floating mine. Nay, it's a man with his hair in curlers. Give me the boat, his wife. I'll haul him aboard.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Oh, that was just a little boat hook from my nose.
Oh, that is better. Now, permit me to introduce myself. I am Leonardo da Vinci, boy wonder of the Renaissance. Artist in oil, sculptor, all classes of murals painted while you wait.
The old ladder.
How came you in the water, sire?
I slipped out for a tube of crimson lace. And instead of the crimson lace, I slipped in the Flamen Canal.
Incidentally,
yes,
I am Ferdinando Lisa, known around Venice as Ferdi Lisa.
Indeed, yes. Well, your servant, sir.
No, it's my wife, actually. Her name is Mona. Mona, this is Leonard Finchley.
Leonardo da Vinci.
All right, well, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. You're rocking the boat. I'll go up the curly end and steer.
Madam Lisa, your beauty is exquisite, Signora. Oh, if only I had my magic painting book and egg cup full of water. I will not rest until I have dressed you on canvas. Here, let's slip into the sail locker.
My husband is uncommon jealous and very powerful. He has designed a new public building, which is...
That smile, so gentle, so secretive.
When can you come to my studio?
Tomorrow forenoon. Ferdy is going to the furnishing stores to help Papa Piccolino. Yes, carry down.
Carry down.
All right, get ready, you two. We're coming into the jetty now. Hold there, dockyard loafer. Will you make fast our gondola?
Aye, senor. Throw up the painter.
With pleasure.
No, put me down.
So for the next 4 years, while Mr. Leeser's building grew taller and taller, Leonardo worked seriously on his portrait of Mrs. Leeser. Till finally...
Hold still, Mona. All I have left to paint are your eyes. Let's see now. One, two, finish! Oh, now, my beautiful one, and gaze upon your likeness.
Oh, Lord. You've given me a sense of passion.
Well, I had a dollop of white paint left over. And now, Mona Mia, my reward. Come, Donna, let's get mobile.
No, Leonardo, you must not. It is wrong for a wife to permit a stranger to kiss her hand while her husband is putting up a public building.
Oh, but cannot you see how the young Italian blood is pounding through the old Australian body? Dear, for years, you have lured me on to that smile.
Oh, no, that smile was not to lure you.
No?
Oh, Mona.
It was on account of my husband's public building. You see, he's never designed one before. And as soon as I saw the plans, I realized... Oh.
You realized? What?
You'll find out when he unveils it tomorrow.
And what is more, senor, I am just as anxious as you are to see what my 24-story building has turned out to be like. I would have made it 25, but that's another story.
Here, he's a gorgeous, he's just waiting for the unveiling, doesn't he? Would you care for a seat from my glass?
Oh, yes, indeed. It's just that, on second thought... No, thank you, Lady Borgia.
Oh, hey, look, Mr. Leeser is going to pull the sheet away from the building now.
And so, I now unveil this great building, standing upright, straight and cool. I give you the Tower of Pisa. Oh, poor Bunny, you wish. Mona, you knew all the time. I'll wipe that chin off your face. Come here, you dreams, dear country.
In the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. There's involved the Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Alma Cogan, June Whitfield, Herbert Mobsin, and the Keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in next week and...